I want you to imagine with me for a moment that you have two children, you've gone through a divorce, and you're just trying to pick up the pieces of your life. And now I want you to imagine that your extended family members decide to ruin your life, cause you to not be able to get a job, take your children, and leave you in the dark. That's exactly what has happened to Nailona, a woman who reached out to me recently just begging for help. In this video today, I'm going to hopefully give her some of that help and share with you her tragic story. Maybe we can help her get her kids back home. Let's talk about it.
Closed captioning provided by Athena Moberg and CPTSDFoundation.org.
My name is Angie Atkinson, and on this channel, I offer free daily video coaching to help you discover, understand, and overcome narcissistic abuse in toxic relationships. I like to call it toxic relationship rehab. So if that sounds good to you, hit that subscribe button and let's get going. So we're going to start off with a letter. Nailona sent me this email, and I'm going to just really quickly read it to you.
She says, "Hi, Angie. My name is Nailona. I desperately need help, or rather my children need help. They are the reason I created a website, and it's scapegoatnomore.com. The site includes a GoFundMe campaign because I can't afford an attorney. And what is happening to my children is so bad that they are both suicidal now. My daughter's only 10 and has never had a care in the world before this, aside from what new Beanie Boo she wanted. Now she wants to die. Please take a few minutes to look over my site and please listen to the recordings. If you could help in any way, maybe bring attention to my campaign. I swear I've aged 5 years in the last 2.5 months because of the anxiety and stress of worrying and working on getting back on track. My heart is so heavy. I can't sleep or eat or barely think straight. This is an email from my son. He had to sneak to send to me because his aunt has cut him off from any kind of contact with the outside world and convinced his teachers and cousins to guard him like a hawk. A few days prior, he had sent an email that just said, 'Mom, help us' in the subject." Well, as you can imagine, this had me curious, and I went on to read the next email from her son. And he says, "Hey, I know you're doing everything you can to get us out of here, but I can't take it anymore, and neither can Violet. She tells me she wants to kill herself, and the way Michael is around her scares me to the point of shaking. I feel like my soul is being sucked out of me. Screw that. I feel like my soul has already been sucked out of me. What little shred of myself I've been holding on to feels like my enemy now, because if I say what I think or feel, I suffer hours or days of being told how wrong and stupid I am. Or she threatens me. Or she threatens to take me to court or send me away to a Christian boot camp. My brain just feels like mush, and when I start to think about things, I feel like I'm gonna lose my mind. So I just try to be as brain dead as possible. Everything about these people is insane. Nobody thinks thoughts outside of what Auntie thinks. I mean, not really. If anybody has an opinion different from hers, she gets pissy and everybody pays for it in one way or another. She puts guilt on me for her having to take care of us whenever she can. Like, she slips a comment into any and every conversation about what a stupid pain I am. Could say he's hungry, and she could find a way to insult me in her reply to him. I'd like to talk to some people other than these people. Some old friends or anybody else, really, but we can't do anything online because we might be trying to talk to you. Violet misses her friends a lot. She would feel so much better if she could just play Roblox, but she can't, because you could get on Roblox and talk to her. I would be a little happier if Violet could just play Roblox, because I know it would make her happy again. I mean, she laughs and jokes around, but she's not Violet anymore. Not the bubbly, happy Violet we know. My heart hurts and my brain is screaming all the time. I'm not trying to make you feel bad or stress you out more, but I don't know how much longer I can cope here. Just please hurry and make something happen before I have to pitch the last minuscule piece of my soul. I love you and miss you a lot. We both do. Violet misses the pets like crazy, too. She's scared that Gracie will die of old age before we see her again, or Chase, or Shaka. I try not to think about these things because it's really sad. Bye. Love you."
Now, my response to her email was real.
And I didn't respond until after I took a long, hard look at her website. With a heavy heart, I started, "Dear Nailona, we have many parallels in our stories. Even our kids are similar ages. I have a 15-year-old son and a 10, 11 tomorrow, year old daughter still at home, and all I can say is that there's a lump in my throat and my heart hurts for you and your beautiful kids. The idea that she's taking part of their precious childhood away from you makes me angry on your behalf. I cannot believe they have allowed this. You have no choice but to fight, and I have no choice but to do as much as I can to help."
It was honest and it was heartfelt. I'm not going to read you the whole thing, but But essentially what I said to her was, I'm so sorry. I've also experienced a similar type of treatment from family, but I was a little luckier than you. My family didn't succeed in trying to take my children, but I want to help you. So I asked her to talk with me, to send me some information, and she did that. And today I'm going to share with you her story. So take a look.
About 2 years ago, my children and I moved into an apartment, and shortly after, I began getting sick and sicker and sicker. Months went by, and my condition only worsened. Towards the end of my lease, I noticed some mold growing on the walls around the vents. I shined a flashlight inside the vent, and there was black mold lining the vents. I can only assume that's what was making me sick. I have severe allergies, and I nearly died as a child from it. I was having difficulty even getting my children to school, and I was in desperate need of help. I was very hesitant to ask my family because of our history and their tendencies to physically abuse me and to try to take my children from me. However, I was concerned as to if I was going to pull through, and I had nowhere else to go. So I asked my parents for help. They let my children and I move in with them. This was meant just to be temporary, long enough for me to recover and find new housing. Shortly after we moved to my parents' house, my sister came from Washington on a Greyhound with her two sons to visit my parents and her other son, who has lived with my parents for, I believe, 6 years. During the time that my children and I were in the apartment and I was getting sick, my son was having issues, was having gender identity questions. I took him to a therapist for this, and the therapist actually specialized in that particular teenage issue. And I also took him to another therapy center during the time that my sister was there, and my son got to spend time with her youngest child. It was a relief for me because my son really enjoyed his company, and I was thankful for the distraction for him. My parents have always been somewhat cruel to my son, ever since my daughter was born anyway. He has been sort of ostracized and picked on since then, especially by my mother. So I agreed to let him go for a visit to Washington, and that's all it was meant to be. He was not moving there. I was not recovering quickly. I was still very ill. My sister had led me to believe that where she lived was a rural country setting. She described it as being a beautiful, wild terrain.
Unfortunately, Nailona told me that was not the case.
And my son was really into bushcrafting and learning survival skills. So with all these factors combined, he had been struggling with some issues. It was good for him to be around a boy. I pictured her living in this beautiful country setting, and I didn't want him around my parents, so I agreed to let him go. My sister promised me that she would take him to the bus station whenever I requested her to do that. About an hour after I left my son at the bus stop with my sister, my son called me and told me that he didn't think it was such a good idea anymore. He was being very vague, and it was hard to understand him. And I thought that he was nervous about being that far away. So I told him to just give it a try. And I assured him that if he didn't like it, that he could come back at any time. Throughout the trip to Washington, he called me several times saying the same thing. What I didn't know was that as soon as I left him with my sister, that she changed. She was deliberately interrupting his phone calls with me. She was monitoring everything he said, hovering over him, and wouldn't allow him to go off where he could talk in private with me. I didn't know this for quite a while, because when he got to Washington, she continued the same behavior. Every time I tried to speak with my son, there was an interruption. He had to get off the phone for one reason or another. Over the course of a few weeks, he began getting in trouble after speaking with me. And it took a while for either of us to figure out what was going on. But a few weeks after he was there, my son began to express depression. We noticed that after he would speak with me, he would be in a better mood. Whenever he got off the phone with me, being in a better mood. It seemed to put my sister in a bad mood, and he would be treated badly. My son ended up spending a year there. The reason that my son was there that long, there's not just one reason. The first reason is because when I spoke to my family about him coming back, my parents told me that he was not allowed to come back to their house. I had to find housing before I could bring my son back, despite him being terribly depressed. When I did find housing and began to move my belongings out, my mother stood in the doorway, physically blocking me, and began screaming at me. She made threats about my children, and because of her history, I knew that she was good for her threats, and I knew that I would have to play her game. I would have to go along, not rock the boat, and not challenge her in any way. And I knew that if I wanted to get my son back and get myself and my daughter out of their home safely, I would have to come up with a solid plan and I would need help. There are things that my mother does. My mother has a way of very covertly controlling everything. And while I understand that this doesn't make sense to anyone that comes from a remotely normal family, my mother didn't want me to move out. She didn't want me to work. She didn't want me to have money. She didn't want me to have my son back. The way it works in my family is whatever my mother wants is what my mother gets. And so my father and my sister were stepping in line, being obedient to her wishes. Anytime that I challenged my mother, I was met with hostility, and because of the physical abuse that I have suffered, this time around, when either my mother or father would try to corner me as they have done in the past, this time, even though I was on the second floor, when they tried to corner me, I went out the window and out to the roof immediately so that I could get away if need be before I was beaten. This happened several times when I talked about working or moving out. There are ways my mother prevents me from working. It's not always easy to explain, but there is one example that happened towards the end of the year that I was there. When I first moved in there, I was taking my daughter to church, and it was the same church as my parents. I had started working with the youth leader. I was a youth leader many years ago, and I really enjoyed it, and I love working with teenagers. I was very excited about it. But the more that I went to the youth group meetings and the more involved I got, the more my mother would criticize, especially cut down the youth pastor and find fault with him and with what I was doing. I decided to just quit and stop going to church. So for the rest of the year, my parents would try to take my daughter to church, and she didn't always want to go because my mother would make her feel bad and try to force her to go to the children's service. When I took my daughter to church, I allowed her to stay and listen to the pastor's sermons because that's what she likes to do. But when she went with my parents, my mother would make her feel really bad for not going. And if my daughter insisted she didn't want to go, my mother would be angry with her and let her know that she was upset with her. So for these reasons, my daughter didn't exactly enjoy going with my parents, but most Sundays she did to make my parents happy. So towards the end of the year, I made the mistake of letting my mother know that I was trying to work. And it happened like this. Saturday night, my mother came up to our bedroom and asked my daughter what dress she was wearing to church the next day. My daughter didn't know, so my mother went into her closet and began looking through dresses. She picked one out. She said, "How about this one?" My daughter said, "Okay." And then my mother stayed in our room, continuing to talk to my daughter in an effort to get her excited about going. So she talked to my daughter for about 10 minutes, trying to really pump her up and get her excited about going to church. Later that evening, my mother asked me if I would go to church. And I said, "No, actually, I'm taking advantage of Violet being with you guys, and I'm going to work." That was where everything went downhill from that point. So the next morning, when somebody wakes up in the morning at my parents' house, I always wake up. Everybody wakes up as soon as the first person gets up because all the bedrooms are upstairs, close to each other. It's an old house, creaky stairs, hardwood floors, and we had lots of dogs and cats. And so as soon as somebody wakes up, all the dogs run around upstairs and the cats come in and there's a lot of commotion. And every Sunday when my daughter's going to church with them, they always come in the bedroom and wake her up. And I always get up and help her get ready. And this Sunday morning, my daughter and I woke up and the house was empty. My mother and father and my nephew had all gotten ready for church and left without us waking up. The only way for that to have happened is if they had all literally tiptoed around the house and carried three dogs down the stairs so that we didn't hear their toenails on the floor. And that's exactly what they did so that I could not work.
Of course, Nailona's mother just played dumb and acted like she had no idea what the two were talking about when they asked what happened. Nailona's daughter felt terrible because her grandmother had gotten her all excited about going to church.
In the year that I had lived there, I had never heard my mother play music. In my entire life, I've never heard my mother play music loud. But the following Sunday after that one, she turned on some gospel music at about 7 o'clock in the morning, which was about an hour earlier than when she normally gets up. And she cranked it full volume, so loud that the walls were rattling. This is the psychology of my mother. That was her way of rubbing it in my face that she prevented me from working and that she's in control.
Since she realized it was not going to get any easier, Nailona decided now was a good time to try to get the correct amount of child support since her ex-husband hadn't really been paying quite enough to support the children. Nailona said it was safer for her children if she just left it alone. This was because Nailona's ex-husband had also been abusive, so she hadn't said anything up to this point. However, when they did decide to go to court, Nailona's ex-husband claimed that he was going to file bankruptcy. And while the judge did award her an additional $600 per month, she didn't receive the first payment. When she called the child support office, they told her this was due to the fact that her ex-husband had filed bankruptcy.
So I told my family this because they were all wanting money from me and I didn't have it. But shortly after that, the child support did start coming in and it was increased. So there had just been this momentary lapse. So I didn't tell my family. This was my opportunity to get out and get my son back.
From the moment Nailona told her mother that she was working, the tension in the house became palpable. And since she was working nights, this made it much harder.
I waited for everyone to fall asleep, and then I would sneak out to go work. It's crazy.
Nailona's new boss had a home that he was willing to let her and her children move into with no security deposit as long as Nailona was willing to clean the house. This, she said, is what she was doing at night. That is, in addition to her day job.
I hauled out loads and loads and loads of trash. It was no easy job.
Bottom line, the inside of the home was disgusting, and it took Nailona a very long time to get it done because she could only sneak away for a few hours each night.
Not only had tension arisen in my parents' home, but also 2,500 miles away in my sister's home. And my son was bearing the brunt of all of it. My son could do nothing right. For no reason, he was just harassed and in trouble. So one day my son called me highly distressed and told me that my sister had been following him around screaming stupid and idiot at him. She wasn't saying anything else.
Nailona's son Carpenter specifically asked his aunt repeatedly to explain what was wrong, why she was so upset.
He just kept yelling stupid and idiot. He said she won't say anything else. She's just yelling the single words, stupid, idiot, repeatedly, over and over, and following him around. It was insanity. And then she began shoving him against the walls and shoved him all the way down the hallway and out the door and then locked it.
After having been shoved out of the house, 15-year-old Carpenter was forced to sleep outdoors that night during one of the biggest heat waves of the year.
And he didn't have a penny in his pocket. He didn't have any water, and he slept under a boat that night.
In desperation, Nailona called the police, she called CPS, and she called 911, she said, because CPS and the police wouldn't help her. And the next morning, when Nailona's sister did let her son back in the house, she still continued to call CPS because she was very concerned for his well-being.
I continued to keep calling the police and CPS, asking them, begging them to please go check on my son and to please speak with him away from her, speak with him alone. But they wouldn't do it.
Nailona said that after weeks of negotiation and a lot of manipulation from her sister, it was agreed that she would purchase a ticket and her son would come home the next day. Her sister agreed to take him to the bus station. Apparently, according to Nailona, her sister must have believed that Nailona planned to borrow the money from her father. And when she found out that Nailona was actually going to buy the ticket, all the drama ensued.
My son calls me. And he's having a panic attack, a full-blown breakdown. I can hear my sister in the background screaming, and she sounded totally out of her mind. And she was screaming at my son, "You're killing your grandfather," over and over. Because my mother was so angry that I was trying to get my son back. And because my father is her dumping ground for all of her complaints, my son was giving his grandfather a heart attack from stress caused by him trying to leave and come back to me. My father had actually had a surgery coming up for his back, but my sister told my son that he was having heart surgery because of him. And he was crying into the phone, "I'm killing my grandfather. I'm killing my grandfather. I'm killing my grandfather." And I can hear her in the background. It carried on. Then I hear her scream, "You can get a social worker to take him to the bus station." I texted her and I said, "Why would I do that? You said you would take him." She, at that point, refused to take him to the bus station.
At this point, Nailona started calling everyone she could think of. The police, CPS, 911, anyone who would listen. She even called the mayor. No one would help her get her son out of that woman's house.
My sister had convinced all of these people that I was this homeless, drug addict, mentally ill monster that would, if I needed money, I would let pedophiles rape my little girl.
Nailona's sister had essentially completely destroyed her image to a legal system that was supposed to be built to help her and her children. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case.
Speaking to me on the phone, they were condescending. They refused to help. I was begging them to just speak to my son away from her and ask him what's going on. Not one of them would do it.
Nailona tried to rent a car in order to pick up her son, but she was turned down because she didn't have a credit card. She would have taken her van, which had been in pretty good shape up to this point, except that something happened and now suddenly it just wasn't firing right. And despite the fact that she had a lot of experience figuring out misfirings, it didn't help in this case. And unfortunately, she was left without a vehicle that would take her safely to pick up her child.
Would her parents, who clearly had shown that they didn't want Nailona to have a job and that they didn't want her to get her son back, would they really go so far as to sabotage her van so she couldn't go pick up her child?
My son called me again in the same predicament of she's screaming in the background and he can't handle any more of it. He's having a total breakdown. I hear her demanding he give her his phone. And this is when things got really scary for me because I knew what could happen if I lost communication with my son. So I hear her screaming at him to give her his phone. And I said, "Don't, Carpenter, don't do it." I heard what sounded like she attacked him. And I said, "Carpenter, run to the police station." I knew it was close by the house there. And I said, "Don't give her your phone. Run to the police station." So it's what he did. And I heard what sounded like a physical altercation going on. And I listened as he was running and running and running. And then he got on the phone and he said that the police station door was locked. He said that it was closed. And so I got off the phone with him for a minute and I called the police department and told them my son was out there. He needed help. and they said that there was a bell that he had to ring. And so I was, before I could call him back to tell him that, my sister sent me a text message saying that she reported him as a runaway. When my son eventually went back to my sister's house after she reported him as a runaway, I don't know who she called, but I know that she had him tied down to a stretcher and hauled away to a psych ward where he was further medicated and he had to stay for 2 weeks. Based solely on her word, she used his drawings. She said that he was trying to kill himself. He was trying to get to me. He was trying to get away from her. He was trying to get help is what he was doing. And when he finally went back from exhaustion, heat exhaustion, hunger, that's what she did to him. And the reason she did this was so that I could not find him and get to him. And so that when I would have to contact her to find out where he was, that she could then kidnap my daughter, which the police assisted her in doing with no evidence to support her claims whatsoever, none. And they required no evidence for him to be tied down to a stretcher, medicated, and stuck in this place for 2 weeks, which is exactly what my parents did to me when I was much younger than him. I knew exactly where she was gonna go with that. I knew exactly what she was gonna do. So I told him, don't go to the police, go to a friend's house. So he went to a friend's house and he hung out there for a while, but he couldn't stay the night. So before nighttime came, I went and got my daughter out of school and I began the 2,500 mile drive to Washington because my sister wouldn't put him on the bus. During that time that I was driving, I was trying to get hotels to let me pay over the phone. I was trying to get restaurants to let me pay over the phone. Halfway through the trip in Nebraska, my engine blew out. There was no fixing it. The next day, the tow truck driver who had towed my van away dropped us off at a hotel, my daughter and I. And the next morning said that there was a retired sheriff that had a car for sale. So he took me there the next morning and I checked it out and it drove, it ran fine. So, and it was only $500, so I bought it. My daughter and I hit the road to go get my son. When I got there, I called my sister and asked where my son was because I hadn't heard from him. And she wouldn't tell me. And so I called the police and they knew where he was, but they wouldn't tell me either. The police ended up calling me and telling me my son was at the police station and that I just needed to come and sign for his release.
As you might imagine, it wasn't so easy and life was about to get a lot harder for Nalona and her family.
I should have asked to speak with my son, but I really didn't expect that they would just be lying to me. And I was so excited. I was so darn excited to get to my son, just to give him the relief of being with people that love him and care about him. And give him the relief of just loving him, just giving him a hug. So my daughter and I walked in the police station door, my daughter holding my hand, and the second that we walked in and the door shut behind us, one police officer grabbed my daughter, like violently grabbed my daughter, ripped her away from me into another room. And it scared my daughter. I mean, it scared her bad. And the other police officer grabbed me and pushed me into another room and was doing that, you know, their chest up in my face, looking down, screaming at me because I was verbally trying to defend myself. Like, what's going on? What are you doing? Stop. Like, what are you doing? And they start. The other police officer came in the show. There was two of them in my face screaming at me that I need to shut up and sit down and that if I said another word, they would arrest me. And they served me with papers, a motion that had been signed by the commissioner, Elizabeth Tootsie, her name is, and a motion for a restraining order against me because my sister claimed that I was Not just mentally ill, but implied that I was schizophrenic, that I was a self-admitted drug addict, which was interesting, that I was homeless, and that if I needed money, I would let pedophiles rape my daughter.
Clearly, none of this was true. Nailona had been ill, but only because of the black mold that had been found in her rental home. She had not been on drugs. She had certainly never subjected her daughter to those horrors that her sister claimed she had, and yet they didn't let her leave with her daughter that day.
So I spent the next 2 weeks, I couldn't leave because there was a hearing coming up. I spent the next 2 weeks in shock. I spent 1 week in a hotel because I had run out of money, so I couldn't leave by the time the hearing came around. So I spent 2 weeks sleeping in my car at a truck stop. 2 weeks without money for food.
During the 2 weeks that Nailona waited for her trial, she paid an attorney $100 for a consultation. She wanted to try to have them help her get her son back. She needed information. Nailona said the attorney only spoke with her for 5 minutes and she basically left more confused than ever. She had no new information. Even so, she tried to gather up the evidence that she would need to prove her innocence. She needed to prove that all of the allegations that her sister made were false. Even though her sister made those allegations without any proof. She even tried to get someone to give her a drug test to prove her innocence, but it never quite worked out that way for Nailona.
The really insane thing about all of this is that my sister has been professionally diagnosed with a mental disorder, and she's been medicated since she was a teenager. So when my son was in this hospital where he did not belong, and he was only there because a psychopath is out there being allowed to dictate and destroy children's lives and my life, he told every therapist and doctor there that his aunt was crazy, that she's lying, and that he just wanted to get to his mother, who was coming to get him. He begged and begged and begged to have a phone call to be able to call me, and they wouldn't allow him to. He said not a single one of those people cared in the least. The more that he voiced what was really going on and his feelings, the more they treated him like he was mentally ill. So he did tell everybody there that his aunt is crazy, she's lying, and he wants his mother. Since he's been out, he's spoken to CPS workers and told them all the same thing. The police, I don't know if they ever did speak with him. So about 4 weeks ago now, on one of my once a week supervised phone calls with my children, supervised by a psychopath that has kidnapped them and is abusing them on a daily basis, my son started to tell me that there was somebody that concerned him about being around his little sister. He said that it scares him to the point of shaking, the way that this person acts around his little sister. I asked him who, and he couldn't say. And I started to tell him that he needed to tell somebody at school or somebody aside from me. And when I started to tell him that, my sister hung up the phone. So I called CPS and spoke with a woman. She was using logic, and she was actually concerned about children, is the feeling I got from her, as opposed to the feeling I got from every other CPS worker I had spoken to in 3 months. She actually made a report and sent it in. So I waited and waited to hear back from whoever received that report. I finally called myself and asked for the status. I got voicemail, and so I left a message. I left several messages and never got a phone call back. And so then I called the supervisor, and she was reluctant to speak with me, but she finally did. This is what transpired from me calling and making a report that my son told me on my supervised phone call that he's concerned about somebody. He didn't say it, but it was very clear what he was saying, that he's concerned that if my daughter's left alone with somebody in this house where he's living, that she could be molested. When I tried to tell him to tell somebody, I was hung up on. So that was the report. And what transpired from that was the CPS worker assisting and educating my sister on how to take my son to court to force him to be more obedient or else he gets put in juvie. That's what happened. So every time my children reach out for help, every time they talk to an adult or somebody who's there to protect children, and they tell them what's going on, they tell them that they're scared of her, that she's crazy, that she's lying, that they want to go home, and they're met with punishment, 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 being tied down to a stretcher and taken to a psych ward for 2 weeks and medicated for trying to get away from a psychopath that is not only physically abusing them, but psychologically abusing them. I didn't realize that I was supposed to file a declaration. So when I went to the hearing, because I hadn't filed those papers, my sister got whatever she was asking for, pretty much. She got temporary custody anyways. So in this time, my children have been, in no exaggeration, suffering intense psychological and emotional abuse.
The bottom line here is this family needs help. And if you noticed Nailona's face, if you noticed her voice, you know that's the face and the voice of someone who's been traumatized. And she doesn't deserve it. Her children certainly don't deserve it. The letter that her son wrote to her broke my heart because it reminded me so much of the way that my own child would speak to me. It was the same sort of language. And to me, that says she and her child were close. They had an open relationship. You can't fake that kind of thing. They had a loving, open, honest relationship. And here's this woman stuck with no help, no one to support her, all by herself. Her whole family has turned against her. And I hope that we as survivors can raise up together and help her. Here are some things you can do to help Nailona.
Share this video or visit scapegoatnomore.com and click through to Nailona's GoFundMe for Carpenter and Violet. You can also share the GoFundMe on Facebook or Twitter. And of course, you can also donate if you're able to do so.
All right, I'm going to wrap up. I know this has been a long video, and if you're still with me, I sincerely appreciate it. Before I sign off for today, I'm going to really quickly share with you a shout out to my amazing channel supporters, my amazing channel members, my inner circle. Take a look.
Angela, Susan, Roxanne, Debbie, Lorenzo D., Life's Revival, Trisha Wolf, James F., Marlene, Jen, Sarah Lee, Patricia, Delilah, Darla, Boku, Paul, Janet Hill, Pierre Lala, Laura Wagner, Charlie Trevino, Linda Krause, Bible News Radio, and Angel. Thank you so much. Again, I just want to say thank you so much for hitting that join button. Your support really does mean a lot to me. Thank you again.
It means the world to me. All right, that's all I've got for you right now. But as always, thank you so much for being a part of my day and a part of my life. And hey, thanks for letting me be a part of yours. It really does mean a lot to me. Now, before I go, make sure you take a look at the videos I'm leaving for you right there and right there. And while you're here, hit that subscribe button right down there so we can stay connected and continue on this healing journey together. I'll see you soon.